Blog Talk Radio.
Cause tomorrow might be good for something. Hold on, feeling like I'm headed for a breakdown, and I don't know. Talking to myself in public and dodging glances on the train. And I know they've all been talking about me. I can hear them whisper, and it makes me think there must be something wrong with me. Out of all the hours thinking,
was Unwell by Matchbox 20, released in 2003 on their album More Than You Think You Are. And I'd like to welcome everyone listening to a Team of Voices broadcast of Off the Rack. I'm your host, Raconteur. In case you're wondering, a Team of Voices is the name of our group on the allpoetry.com website, where you'll find the links to the poems that you'll hear on this podcast, and also be able to meet some of the amazing poets who are gracious enough to share their words. Feel free to join us on allpoetry.com. It's free to join. I hope you're ready, because now it's time to rack our brains discussing the things that drive us crazy and touch on how they make us think and feel.
Yeah, I'm just a little crazy. Coming up with a topic was easy enough because, you know, it's kind of a default mode for me. You get me talking about food, I usually avoid it because I can't stop talking when I get started. So I may be rambling a bit tonight. It's something, you know, very familiar. It starts, you know, when we're children. Anyone that has kids or knows people that have kids, you turn around and next thing you know, whatever they have in their hands is in their mouth. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's, you know, that's not food. Spit it out. I guess that has to do with the teething. But then, you know, after the teeth grow in, they're still putting stuff in their mouths, and that's where the braces come in, I guess, too. I guess that's one of the reasons why dentists make so much money. Oh, everything goes in people's mouths, and you could specialize in either end, I guess. But before I start getting graphic, I got my co-host and friend Pretty Bird on the line. Say hello.
Hello, hello.
How you doing?
I'm a little unwell. I'm all kinds of sick to my stomach. Have been for 2 days, but I'm a trooper. I'm fighting it out. Here I am.
Oh, man. That sometimes, you know, it's weird how that can affect people's appetites, and sometimes it doesn't. It's
That's
like you don't
true.
Feel good, but you don't want to put
you're
it in your
hungry.
Mouth.
You're still hungry.
Well, sometimes it's hunger, or sometimes it's just bacon.
Oh, why would you do that to me? Now it's on the brain.
Oh, you got to have that bacon. I don't know. Grease has a weird effect on people, especially over time.
Well, everything is better in bacon fat.
Oh, my God. It changes everything. And you know, sometimes it changes what the recipe I'm going to be cooking, you know. I'm looking to throw something in the frying pan or whatever. And the minute I think about frying onions, okay, well, you know, that should go in bacon grease. So that means I'm going to be frying up some bacon. then there goes the onions in the grease and, you know, maybe even some parboiled potatoes. And then it turns into this whole project, something
yeah,
that should have been
delicious.
2 minutes. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what, my kid's not a big fan of broccoli. Put broccoli in some bacon fat, they'll eat it.
Oh, God. Or, you know, you make that stupid cheese sauce. You dredge the broccoli in cheese. I prefer cauliflower, but, you know, that's just me. I don't know if it's the texture of those, the little, you know, I guess, I don't, would you call them leaves? The florets. The tips of them. Yeah, that's for whatever reason, I guess I like the cauliflower a little better. It's kind of neutral, but, you know, it still picks up some of the flavor, like mushrooms. Oh, man,
ooh.
My mushrooms. Yeah, well, you know, people have weird reactions to that. The same thing with
fungus, they're not friends.
Yeah, it's similar if you've ever had escargot.
I love that.
They take on the flavor of whatever you cook them in. So if, you know, if you make them in, you know, fried butter, then it's like eating a nugget of fried butter.
Well,
it's interesting.
And we used to pick up snails on the rocks at the beach over in Vieques, little island off the coast of Puerto Rico, and literally put them on the grills, pour whatever alcohol they were drinking on it, steam up a little bit and eat them just like that. But they have a flavor on their own. They do. It's just a very mild flavor. And things like garlic, it just kind of melds together so well. Where mushroom has a texture that is unappetizing. And, you know, sometimes there's a flavor, sometimes there's not. But even when there's not, it's got that texture. Like, you'd have to, like, mush it, like, puree it and put it in a sauce and not tell me.
What's funny is, you know, the recommendation about if you're supposed to wash them or not, because it affects, and it's because of the texture. I think they soak up that water and they get spongy. And then when you cook them, they get this off-putting texture to them. But it also depends on which one, obviously, because, you know, a portobello is a big, you know, almost hamburger patty sized mushroom. So, you know, that's going to take a little more effort to mess up than, you know, say something.
Where mushrooms grow.
All over the place.
How do you not wash them? But I saw, like, it was raining, and there was a dead tree in our front yard of the other house. And overnight, these big, giant orange things that just looked like half plates, all these, like, scalloped-edged things that were really quite beautiful. And I was just like, don't touch it. Turns out, yes, they were edible, and apparently they taste like chicken. They're orange on the outside, white on the inside. Saute them up, and it's supposed to taste like chicken. I was like, I don't know what that is, and I'm not going to just fry it up and feed it to my kids, but I trust you. It's all right.
Sounds like hen of the woods.
I have no clue. They're interesting, and they're quite amazing in their lifestyle, in their lifespan, and watching them grow. Like, you blink your eyes, and they're these things, and it's kind of really,
yeah.
Really neat. But you know, they really go through not being there to being spores and dying in like no time at all. So at what point are they edible? Like when in that life cycle is it okay to eat them?
It's funny, the people that deal with that on a regular basis, they go towards, you know, the different methods of farming. And the two most popular are dogs and pigs. And people prefer, or at least my understanding is, they prefer the dogs because the pigs eat the truffles. It's harder to pull a pig off. You know, they'll find them and they'll start eating them. The dogs find them for you and they just leave them alone. So, you know, dogs are more efficient at finding truffles than pigs, apparently. But, yeah, and you know, the thing that wraps my mind around that weirdness, too, is, you know, I first heard it as a joke, you know, talking about a lobster. Who looked at that and decided that was going to be good to eat? You know, it's like you go through the food that we eat and, you know, people, what people consider, you know, edible. You know, if you look at fried calamari, that does not look edible. And if the restaurant is no good, it's usually not edible. But that's a whole nother story. It's like eating rubber bands. But you know, that was another weird thing that you know, flits through my brain all the time about, you know, how to handle a particular thing and who decided that this was going to be edible and who decided, you know, what is and
death
what isn't.
Death decided, my dear. Death decided. When it comes to, like, mushrooms anyway, they're either going to kill you or they won't. So, oh, Charlie died.
Yeah.
We're not eating that one.
And then you talk about things like that. And I learned about this one partly from The Simpsons when Homer was going on about eating fugu, which is blowfish. And there's no part of a blowfish that isn't poisonous. The sushi chefs that learn to butcher that, to cut that up, have to go to school to learn which part. And I use the term edible hesitantly because part of the appeal of eating that apparently is that there's the residual poison that's still in that part of the fish numbs your mouth, and that's why they eat it, because they like that numbness. So you're still actually eating poison, even though, you know, there's only a certain portion that you could eat. Yeah, it's crazy.
I am so picky with my sushi. I like sushi. I like sashimi. I will eat the raw fish, not so much the white fish, but the salmon and the tuna. And you know, they have an interesting texture. If they're slimy, don't eat it. And they have a very mild taste. They taste less before you cook them, you know? So I don't mind it at all, but I am so picky because I will, like, watch the people making it because they're usually out there in the front anyway. And if anybody is, like, you know, wiping sweat off their brow or wiping their nose or what, no, you know, I'm gonna have some cooked stuff over this way. We're good. And now they here at the grocery store they have sushi and it's there. They have a little sushi girl that comes once a day and she'll make it and it's all timed or whatever, which is great. But it's like every third store has it, so they have to have them shipped over from the store that does. She makes it for like all three stores, and I'm just like, well, I will go to the one that's got the lady there in the morning and buy it when I can see her. Otherwise, it can stay right there on the shelf, you know? And we have a caller.
Yeah. No way.
We have a caller. Say hello to Hatter.
Hey.
Hello, hello.
Hey.
Happy
did you bring
belated.
Your bib? I dozed off.
That's okay. That's okay. We're just going on about food, and that's something that I could talk about all night long. So weird food experiences and, you know, how it's something that starts, I guess, when we're kids, you know, picking up whatever's on the floor and putting it in our mouths, you know. But I have to laugh, you know, anytime, you know, one of my friends comments about how, you know, my house is so clean you could eat off the floors. I'm like, yeah, there's a Dorito right there, you know. But anyway. People, you know, they have to pick up, you know, stuff and put it in their mouths. Oh my God, one of the most, I guess it was disgusting. It made it to YouTube, of course. Some idiot waiting in the one of the lounges in the airport. They decided it would be a good thing to not just kind of peel the calluses off their feet, but the way they disposed, they were putting them in their mouth. And I was like,
why would you do that to me? I have this thing about feet. That is not good.
It crosses a line, especially if you like food for me. You know, I take the sanitary stuff off the table, and I'd be like, you know, that can't taste good. I can't wrap my mind. I talk about, you know, my brain buds sometimes. You'll tell me about, you know, this dish or that and the ingredients. And if I haven't had it in my mind, I'll be like, you know, okay, this piece tastes, sounds like, you know, and I know what garlic tastes like. And you could kind of get an idea in your head, you know, if something goes or if it doesn't go. Like if someone were to say garlic ice cream, you know what garlic tastes like, you know what ice cream tastes like. And immediately in your head, you're like, you know, I don't know that that goes. And some people are, you know, take that to the extreme and won't even try it. And then some people are like, you know, I could see that. They have a garlic festival in Jersey every year. And I was fortunate enough to try it from someone that actually knew what they were doing when they made it. And it wasn't like someone just put garlic in ice cream. It had that definite ice cream texture with a garlic finish. It was different. It was different. I don't know that I'd, you know, because of the effort and whatever and the artisanal factor that, they're going to charge a premium price for it. But, you know, I enjoyed it. It's not something I would have spit out. But, you know, at least now I know I got to try it and I know it's not gross, you know. So it's one of those things. I don't know. Wrap your mind around
Gilroy.
What
kind of ice cream?
Gilroy, California. The garlic capital of the world.
Oh, the garlic capital. Yeah, Gilroy.
I think
that's probably where the festival came from. It just, you know, migrated from California across the state, you know, National Garlic Day or something like that. I don't know. Maybe they just have it on the same day that Gilroy does. But, you know, it's one of those things where all things garlic, you know, oh, my God, garlic fries. Oh, you take oil and you flavor the oil with the garlic I'm going to start drooling all over everything now. Are you feeling okay, Hatter? Do you need to run or are you good to hang out?
I can hang for a little while.
All right. Let me know or let Pretty Bird know if you get pressed for time. We'll throw you up on the board right away.
I'm going to say something and give myself away. What I wrote.
Okay.
So you wanted to read now? I'll put you right up.
Yeah, I'll read now.
Awesome.
I'm awake
you
now.
Are. You are on the board.
All right. Somewhere on my bucket list, it goes. Good like this. I hope I fixed it. Okay. What's so strange about what I eat? It's not frog, nor gator, or little pig feet. Every time with tuna on toast, what is it that I crave the most? I think it gives some the willies with my tuna, some Texas chili. Tuna and chili, what's the big deal? It's like my number two of my favorite meals. I guess I should name it. What could that be? Eating cow from the clock and chicken from the sea. This is the second part. This is a true. One day I fried two burgers to feast. I failed to see no buns to eat, but a partial loaf of raisin bread. I could not grasp it in my head. Somewhere in my bucket list, a raisin burger before I die. I don't remember writing that, but what the hell, I'll give it a try. After it was said and done, I think I would buy it. I screwed that up. Raisin burgers to start the wars, peanut butter on the side, dip it all in chocolate sauce once before you die. As a side note, never drink orange Kool-Aid after a nectarine or add any alcohol to a powdered drink called teen. I do like hot sauce on popcorn, watermelon salted, but vanilla ice cream on raisinets covered with maple syrup and sugar. Give me hash in the morning, tongue in the noon, Rocky Mountain oysters for dinner, and I'll eat with a spoon.
That sounds like a very diet. Oh man, I you know the raisin bread for the hamburger. You know, some people, don't like mixing the sweet and the savory. I guess that's probably why I'm diabetic. I lean a little towards sweeter stuff. I could see it, but you know, for me, I prefer more savory with the beef. But then you know, you start talking about the spices like the chili. Oh man, then ramp up the heat a little bit, and that always makes me happy too. And you said Texas chili, so I know you're not talking about chili peppers. You're talking about the actual chili, which is another argument that a lot of people have over, you know, what makes a proper chili. You know, chili's not supposed to have beans, but traditionally
beans.
The chili that chopped meat does have beans. So it goes both ways. I like those things that you mentioned. So you mixed chili with tuna, huh? That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That's almost like a seafood chili. It makes me think of.
Yeah. Everybody's got something to say about it. Well, what's the big deal? I like tuna with chili. I like the chili hot.
Yeah. You talk about culinary, you know, whatever. One might overpower the other, so you don't really get the subtlety of the tuna or whatever. I mean, it all depends on the type of chili and the balance and everything. I could see it working.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, it's your individual taste. And that's what makes it like poetry to me. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why I picked it as a topic as well, because it is so personal and individual. You know, there's things that people eat that, you know, other people go, oh, my God, how could you put that in your mouth? And they're like, are you kidding me? It's delicious. You know, I've seen people dredge French fries. I got a friend that actually puts mayonnaise on his corn.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I understand. Okay, it's fat, it's eggs, I get it, but I wouldn't do that. And then other people turn their nose up when they take the boardwalk fries and they put vinegar on them. I'm like, that's normal to me. You know, I love my potatoes. You know, and I can see, you know, the vinegar potatoes, the salt and vinegar potato chips. You know, that's like the same thought to me. So that's a natural extension. It's like how can you, you know, turn your nose up at that, you know, unless, oh my God, you're ruining the crispiness. Well, there's a way to do it that you don't ruin the crisp. Who the hell cares? You're going to chew it up and eat it anyway. But as far as, you know, your poem goes, you know, you're chronicling the idea very well with, you know, telling people, these may sound like weird combinations, but this is my life. And I've done it and there's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's not. You know, and I think Sweet Pea said something last night. I like corn on the cob with barbecue sauce on it.
Okay. See, again, when that's an ugly word in the sense that, you know, when you say barbecue sauce, how many different kinds of barbecue sauce are there? There's ones that you could take off the shelf that you could barely choke down. There's Dave's Insanity sauce, I think, is one of the ones that's got like three top.
Why is everything so sweet? They make it all so sweet that I can't stand it. It's almost like the barbecue sauces. I mean, I like rib. Is it bullseye? I can take bullseye and heat it up a little bit. That's good.
There's other varieties of barbecue sauce that aren't so sweet, where they go after the chili factor. I know there's one, and I don't remember the name off the top of my head. It may be Dave's Insanity Sauce, but it's got the three top chilies, the three hottest chilies. The ghost pepper is no longer the hottest chili. I think it's the scorpion pepper and the Carolina Reaper. Are those top three? But anyway, I don't like that idea because, you know, that blows out your palate and you can't taste anything.
Well, yeah,
but,
I don't like it. I don't like it so hot. I don't like it so hot. You can't eat it. No, it's just that I don't like the sweetness. Everybody throws brown sugar in it.
Right.
I don't like that.
Well, if I were you and I was hell-bent on doing the barbecue sauce, just do a hack, you know, add something to it. Maybe add the hot sauce to it or something.
I do.
I
add Sorrento sauce and Tabasco. Just a little bit.
If you've never had it, oh my God, I'll never forget. I was in New Orleans and they had outside one of the, I think it was the New Orleans School of Cooking. They had, you know, the different samples and the little grocery store, and they had a bunch of pretzels and little shot glasses full of sauces. There's a sauce called Cajun Power Garlic Sauce. It's not a hot sauce. It's a garlic sauce, but it's got heat to it, almost like a like a hot sauce. But it doesn't rate, you know, anything really worth mentioning that heat on the Scoville scale. It's like, you know, almost insignificant. But oh my God, that sauce is phenomenal. I wanted to drink that whole shot. I'm telling you, I tried that. It goes perfect on chicken. It goes perfect on just about everything. But it's a garlic sauce, so it's like drinking pressed garlic. All the sweetness of the pressed garlic, but not the oversweetness, and the heat of the chili, but not the overheat. So it's like right, mild,
yeah.
Perfect. But anyway, so Pretty Bird, what did you think of Hatter's diet?
You know, I'm down with a whole lot of this stuff except for the frogs, because me and amphibians, not friends. But funny about the gator, Sweet Pea came to visit, and we went out to lunch as soon as she got here. And I was like, you have to try the gator. So I made her eat gator bites, and she's like, kind of tastes like chicken. I was like, it kind of does. But
yeah,
I eat gator. I eat the pig's feet. I eat all that stuff. I put tuna on my mashed potatoes because I like it that way. So I'm a little weird myself. I have a question because I think I know what it is, but I'm not sure I want to know what it is, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What are Rocky Mountain oysters?
Bull balls.
Oh, do you actually eat them?
No. But I had to throw it in.
Now, I'm good with hot sauce on popcorn. I actually like sweet on popcorn. I have to be in the mood for either one.
Oh,
yeah. But that salted melon, that is some good stuff.
Yeah.
Whether it's watermelon, cantaloupe, honeydew, a little salt on that just brings it out so much, the actual melon flavor. So good. And do you eat tongue too? Because I've seen big old cow tongues in Publix, and I'm just like, what do you do with that?
You boil it. You boil it to death. I don't find any appeal to it.
Do you scrape
myself
off those taste buds that look at you like they're magnified?
I can't imagine eating it without peeling it, but some people eat crab and eat it, you know, when it's especially soft shell, they eat it with shell and all. So, you know,
I've had turtle. Unbeknownst to me, but that was an after the fact. My husband went to China, and the appetizer in this restaurant for all of the people in the company that were there was baby duck foot soup. And don't you know, there are itty-bitty tiny embryo duck feet floating up in that soup. I was just like,
yeah.
I've got limits. I could not.
You know, the different cultures tend to try and not to waste anything. You know, the pig's feet and all of that other stuff. Some people love that.
I'm good with the pig's feet.
People, yeah.
In my beans, not like pickled in a jar.
Uh huh.
My uncle had my aunt put it on the table with a server cover, like it was. We sat down and he lifted up, it was the whole tongue case and all. They don't serve it that way. He did that. She's told me that he did that for my benefit. But I'll tell you what,
right.
I did not eat tongue that night. If you can get past the texture, the flavor is fine.
I was just telling
yeah,
Rack before
I,
you
I
got
imagine.
On. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was saying that I was telling you before Hatter hopped on that tomorrow night on the menu here is beef hearts. And that they're not at all like liver, but they're very, very dense. And if you slice them thin and saute them lightly and they stay soft without getting rubbery, they're really quite delicious and super like beef flavored. It's like they inject it with beef flavor. It's like, to me, they don't, but that's just concentrated beef flavor. And it's really super healthy and quite delicious. I almost kind of want to make a cheesesteak out of it. But, you know, I'm still
you
new to
beef
the whole
heart.
Part. I said beef heart. Yes, they're like 5 pounds a piece.
Beef heart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
When you mention China, one of the delicacies that people don't tend to turn their nose up is shark fin soup. That's
yeah,
also
tasteless. They say it's tasteless. besides the other spices you put in, that the shark fin soup is basically tasteless without.
Well, isn't the shark fin fatty?
It's supposed to be an aphrodisiac or some kind of.
Some kind of erectile dysfunction remedy, I think.
Something. Yeah, they say
wow, right
that I had heard. I'd heard that it's tasteless, yeah.
I think
that
the problem
that
with that soup is that is the way that that is harvested, because they'll slice it off and throw it back in there like the poor thing stands a chance. It's just going to get eaten by its neighbors. But, I've had regular shark. Not shark fin.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, shark steaks. Like swordfish steaks.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Thresher shark, yeah. You get thresher shark out here.
Oh, okay. I imagine it's probably got different tastes than some of the other shark, you know, even though it's the same family. The seafood world,
like,
you know. Right. And then you've got redfish and bluefish and catfish and I don't know. The catfish is a bottom dweller, and I got to be in the right mood, I think, to enjoy it.
I made fish fingers with catfish. Best fish sticks my kids ever had.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so sturgeon, though. So sturgeon.
Oh, see, sturgeon is an ugly fish. Like, that is like, that does not look appetizing at all, and they're huge. And a few years back, they you know, so when they go running in the lake, they will hop, they'll like fly out of the thing. These are like 30-pound fish, and maybe even bigger. Who the heck knows? But here, up at a lake about an hour north of here, up on a river actually, one jumped, knocked into a 5-year-old girl in a boat, and killed her.
Wow!
Wow!
That's a big fish.
They get landlocked. There's lakes here still that Folsom Lake still has some landlocked white sturgeon, and because the American River was one, they would run, but once the dams went in, the ones that were upstream were landlocked, and the ocean ones quit running because they couldn't breed up there.
And then that leads to evolution, I believe, because you know you've got these fish that'll actually go from puddle to
they're like 400 pounds. They have the divers that go down to check the turbines in the bottom of the dam every year, and they say every once in a while they'll see a shadow go over them. I made friends I used to fish out there every weekend, and there was an old guy I found. He had a flat bottom boat that was camouflaged, and he had a makeshift cover on it. He'd bring his wife out there sometimes, and I got to know him passing by and everything, waving, and got to talking to him once. I said, "How you doing?" You know, he was out in the deep water because there was nothing hitting shallow in the shallows, and we got to talking, and the wife says, "Go ahead, tell him. Because he loves telling the story, I guess. He went on an hour and 45 minute boat ride where he hooked something over by the dam in the deep water that just pulled him for an hour and 45 minutes. He couldn't get it in, and he swore he would hook that again someday. That's what he was out there every
day. The one that got away, the proverbial fish story.
The only thing that could have been was possibly a landlocked sturgeon, you know.
And they can grow up to 16 feet long and 800 pounds. That's massive.
Wow. You know, you hear the names of some of these fish, and you can't picture them. And then some of them, you see the picture of them, and you don't want to picture them. What is it, the blobfish or the lungfish?
Looks
like the mucus on that thing. Disgusting.
Well, you know, it looks like
evolution.
A fish, like a real fish when it is.
In the water it does.
Because it's down so deep that all the pressure keeps it, you know, formed. And it doesn't have bones.
Yeah.
So when you bring it back up, it's like a giant booger with a face. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the big cod, like big rock cod. You bring them up from the deep, their eyes bulge out and they change form. But,
I think that.
Go ahead.
Evolution in action.
Yeah, you know, in the blobfish, there's no light down there, so nobody was paying attention to what they look like.
Yeah. The blobfish of the dating world. Here we go.
But the Dumbo squid or the Dumbo octopus, the little thing that Lizzie thought it was a toy.
But they're so cute.
Yeah,
I don't think I'm familiar with that one.
Pull it up if you get it.
Have you ever seen Finding Nemo?
Yes.
Remember that itty bitty octopus that had the little octopus that had the little legs?
Okay.
Like it looks like that, has tiny little tentacles instead of these long things, and more of a dome shaped body that isn't so blobby, and it's got these big old eyeballs, and it looks fake.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
fake.
It's so cute.
Yeah, they put down in a dome submersible. And they were down at the bottom, and they saw this thing, and they were broadcasting it back up to the ship. They thought it was a toy. It had fallen over. They didn't know what it was.
Yeah. That makes me think of the blue ring octopus, which is one of the most poisonous. It's a tiny little thing.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, sorry.
Well, I was just saying that there's a theory that there was the possibility of a different life form here on Earth that has evolved with us. It would be the octopus, the squid, octopus, that family, because it's so different.
They're like they're like aliens. They really are. If you Google any of the videos, some amazing stuff when they take something, you know, that looks like it's, you know, 10 feet across and put it in a mayonnaise jar and it opens the lid and comes out on its own, you know? It's amazing to watch some of those videos. Yeah.
I don't think they can trace it, the giant squid and octopus, back too far as prehistoric times. I don't know how far they can go. I'm not real sure about that, but I think the possibility. The Kraken, release the Kraken. That's what it is, release the Kraken.
We'll get Captain Nemo involved.
Well, octopi or cephalopods or whatever you want to call them are 296 million years old. So they're pretty old.
Okay.
At least some version of them are pretty old and ginormous.
Yeah.
If they haven't changed, that's one. That's my point. If they haven't changed, like the size and the different branches that other animal species have branched off and you know evolved to, as they say, the cephalopods are in its own category. Like they haven't changed. I can't quite remember. But, they said there's another alien form on this Earth. It's the cephalopods. I always found that strange.
it's much to the detriment. I keep thinking, now you got me thinking about the stupid octopus that throws its genitals at the female.
I want to say there are several different types of those. Well, that's because like the praying mantis, if they get too close, the female will eat the male when they're trying to procreate. So instead, he rips it off, throws it at her, says, do it yourself, I'm good, bye. And otherwise, you know, that would be the end of that species.
Oh, Black Widow, too.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh man!
Well,
all right.
If it was up to the male species of man to procreate, we would have went extinct millions of years ago.
You know, it's
the bachelor fish.
The bachelor fish.
The distant relative of the blobs.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, I
that's funny.
So who likes calamari? Everybody like
calamari? I love calamari when it's nice and tender and not little rings of rubber.
It has, yeah, it has to be
you
fried,
like the,
right?
And
it
I like the tentacles.
The tentacles. The tentacles are the
yeah.
best, yeah.
They are.
People,
crispy
people
little nuggets.
Some people fight over them. They want to have the rings over the tentacles, but I like the tentacles. There's a place in Brooklyn I used to go to that I loved called Randazzo's. It's changed over the years, but I used to always go there. They have, you know, like a French fry boat, and they fill it with the fried calamari, and you ordered it either smothered or on the side, and hot. There was a degree of heat to it, and it was always a heel of Italian bread that they would put in it. And if you got it smothered, that was like the best part. The Italian bread got soaked in that sauce, and oh man. I think it's like $15 a thing now, but you know, I still remember it from, you know, back in the day. I used to always go there. That was my favorite
remember
treat.
Remember the Hitchcock movie, The Birds?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The restaurant wharf that they're at is called the Tides. It's in Bodega Bay. It's just west of me. If I just go direct west, that's where I ended up. And the Tides is still open. You could get a seafood platter in there, and I don't know what price of it would be now. But, I mean, it is
right.
Just, oh, yeah, mussels, clams, calamari, scallops.
In Boston, when you do the clam bake and they dump that whole pot in the middle of the table on the newspaper, you know, that's heaven to me. You know, you've got everything. You've got the crab legs. You've got the oysters and the mussels and potatoes to boot. So, you know, that's heaven. That and a cold beer, I could outside and eat that all day.
You know, I can crack crabs all day long and be perfectly fine, but I will never understand why people eat, you know, crayfish or crawdaddies or whatever y'all want to call them, because there's so little meat in them and it's so much work to get it out.
You suck head and eat
yeah.
bottom.
Yeah, you're supposed to, what, pinch the tail and suck the head.
There's a way
yep.
of cracking it. There's a way of cracking it.
I have a
it.
Shirt that says that.
Suck the head. Suck the head and eat the bottom. Yeah, we have a lock. California down on the river has the Crawdad Festival every year.
It's very popular in New Orleans, too. That was where I had my first
yeah.
crawfish. They're like little baby
yeah.
lobsters. Oh, my God.
It's
instead
like,
of linguine and clam sauce, linguine
yeah.
and crawfish? Oh, I was in heaven.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between, like, that and a langostino?
And a what?
I think one is a little sweeter than the other. Langostino is shrimp, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
is it?
But I don't know if crawfish is – I guess crawfish is still shrimp.
Well, crawfish are basically fresh water, too. Shrimp
yeah, they have them in the canals over here all over the place.
Yeah.
Is that the one that grows in the rice paddies, too?
It can, sure. Any creek, any body of water.
Okay. Yeah, that's sweet. I know what you're saying about the work, but, you know, that's when I get lazy and I'll just buy 2 pounds of tails already cleaned.
In the restaurant trade, a langostino is the meat of the squat lobster. The heck is a squat lobster? I'll let you know in a minute.
Squat.
It's from California. He's not paying
Ew.
Rent. They don't have
yeah,
to be
is...
pretty if they taste good.
The heck is this thing? It looks like an alien. Let me see if I can put it on the board.
Yeah. Is it squat lobster?
A squat lobster is a langostino. This. Oh, there it is. Okay, good. And that is a langostino.
Oh, nice.
Oh, whoa.
That's just a weird little thing, isn't it?
I'm hungry now.
So here is an interesting food fact. You know the little pill bugs, those little roly-poly pill bug things that they're in the dirt? Okay.
Yeah.
Those are not bugs. Those are land crustaceans, and apparently they taste like shrimp.
Oh.
A little bit. But, hey, I don't hunt, and if I'm lost in the wilderness, because, again, not friends, I can have some a little pile of shrimp, pretend that they're not gross. Better than, you know, killing a bunny. I wouldn't be able to. I'd starve.
Yeah.
So now you know.
All right. I threw my one of my poems up. If you want to hit play when you get a chance and when
absolutely. I see it. Let me just pull it up because my computer's really slow and it was fine a second ago. Apparently it didn't like that Langostino. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, it can go down well.
Give me 1 second because I never resorted my stuff. Okay. And this is Food for Thought. Here we go.
Food for Thought by Raconteur. I do love my pasta, but I try to watch my carbohydrates. The first step to being healthy is to watch what goes on our plates. Tubers have feelings and potatoes have eyes. They give their life happily to become a plate of French fries. Vegetables are delicious, so I prefer mine on the side. My tastes lean towards animal flesh, prepared barbecued, roasted, or even breaded and fried. Wrap it all in bacon. Cover it with cheese. Be sure to practice moderation rather than risk heart disease. Count your calories, watch your sodium. Be smart if you dare to indulge. Otherwise, you risk losing sight of your toes beneath your belly's bulge. Do what makes you happy. You don't need to compromise. You can satisfy your taste buds and your heart with diet and exercise. And poem.
Diet and exercise, when they're paired together, just, you know, they give me anxiety. But I tell you what, and I've heard this one before, and even now it is that animal flesh is such a visceral phrase of because it's not meat, it's not steak, it is animal flesh, it's primal, and it's so good. And, you know, moderation can mean many things. It doesn't have to be little tiny portions. It can be, I'm going to eat a whole lot of meat today, and tomorrow I'll relax a little bit, we're fine. I don't have to do it every day in a row. It's just, how do you not take a plate like in that picture with that scrumptious lobster tail and that filet and not just eat the whole thing? I mean, come on now. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you. So what are your thoughts on Rack's poem?
You know, they say that the last huge evolutionary jump for man in mankind was when we started cooking food, started cooking fish and meat. And it was, you know, good reasons for an argument on that side. But yeah, wrap it all in bacon, cover it with cheese. You know, the way you ended it too. You can satisfy your taste buds and your heart with diet and exercise. I'd rather have a cold bud and French fries.
Yeah.
French fries. I love anything potato.
You had to go vegetarian and say potato, right?
But he said French fries, and I'm like, and I was like, oh, French fries.
Yeah, I know.
And you can't have the soggy fries. My mom used to make the soggiest fries. I'm like, how do you make fries soggy?
Yeah.
They have to be crunchy, and then, you know, you have to have a little bit of something to bite into. But,
it's funny. I remember watching Food Network, and this guy made it was a potato dish, but I think it was Guy Fieri was talking to him, and the thing that he did was it was kind of like mashed potatoes, but it was more of a hash brown. And, you know, there's this – I won't call it a holy grail, but there's this thing about that mixture of potato – not hash brown, like a tater tot, which is kind of like a hash brown too, I guess. But, you know, it's that combination of onion and potato, and it's crispy on the outside, but it's still creamy on the inside. But it's not mashed potato. It's more potato chunk kind of fused together somehow, and sometimes it's got cheese and sometimes it doesn't. It's one of those things. He spoke about it like it was the Holy Grail, and I got a kick out of that because I'm like, it's a potato. I mean, you know, as far as presentation goes, it's pretty to look at, but you could get the same results just, you know, taking that potato and putting the cheese on it and kind of just, you know, shoveling it.
The best breakfast potatoes I ever had are thanks to my son. We had tater tots, but a bag of frozen tater tots, and he's just like, I'm going to do something. And I'm like, okay. And he's just, I'm sick. And like, okay, so he took a bunch of thawed tater tots and put them in the waffle iron. Holy crap.
Yeah.
That was like the best thing ever.
I thought you were going to say he breaded something with them, because that's another thing, you know, you could bread something with potatoes, so.
No, he does. They were crunchy. They had little pockets of stuff, little bit of salt. So good, so good, so good. And I've never really enjoyed a baked tater tot. If you fry up a tater tot, it's a completely different animal.
Well, remember when certain restaurant chains, they restuffed the potatoes. They'd scoop out a potato, mix it with all sorts of good stuff, put it back. Yeah, I mean, they made a killing. One potato, one freaking Idaho potato, they're charging whatever, you know, $3-4 for. They were making a killing on that stuff.
Yeah,
it's good. You know,
and the joke with that, you know, it's not just like it's almost leftover mashed potatoes, you know, because you know they're sneaking that in there as well. They're getting rid of other things, the broccoli and the other stuff that they you know, add in on the side. But then, you know, let's put a little bacon bits on this too, you know, and then the price goes up another $2.
But it's so good.
Yeah.
I never could deal with the twice baked potatoes for that reason.
Some people make an entire meal out of a potato like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those foot-long baked potatoes that they sell, oh, those things look like footballs. They're awesome. That's a lot of behind. That's like, you know, that's just a lot of potato.
Yeah, I like the fried up potato wedges. They spice them up real good, the potato wedges, and they basically fry them. They're not real thick, but they're
like steak fries.
They're really good. Well, they're not thick either. They're not thick, so they're cooked to a crisp almost. It's about the seasons, the garlic and everything else they sprinkle on it. That's good.
And then you get into a whole nother category when you start talking about, okay, now what do you dip them in? Do you dip them in cheese? Do you dip them in ketchup? Ketchup and mayo?
Chocolate
relish? Cake. Yeah. Yes, there's people that's not unheard of either. Is the French fries and the milkshake? What is it? I'm going to give away the secret of what is it? Not Smash Burger. In-N-Out Burger, I think it is. You know that they've got, you know, that's a secret menu. You could order your burger. I think they call them unicorn burgers. And when you order it, what do they do? They give you they take the hamburger and they stick one French fry in the middle.
Yeah, look at they have a video of the alien burger or the UFO burger. You got to check it out and how they make it. Could be the best.
I'm happy with my burger skills. One of my favorite stories was I was reading about the war in New York City between a bunch of frickin' chefs trying to decide who could make the most expensive hamburger, and they were making, you know, gilded this and truffle that and literally finishing it with like gold flake, foie gras, and all these other ingredients as like, you know, and it's like $100-something burger. And people go there and order this thing. I'm like, you're out of your minds. It might be David Burke. Burke and Burke. He might have been the one that did it. But I don't remember if it's still the current record holder. I think someone went even further and topped it with, you know, something that wasn't a hamburger, you know. But one of my, I mean, you know, think what you will of Bobby Flay. There's a lot of, he's very controversial. But when he starts talking about hamburger, he's a bit of a purist. He's like, you know, you start talking about, you know, oh, I put this in my hamburger. He goes, that's not a hamburger anymore. Now it's a meatloaf. You know, and I kind of agree with him on that. If you want to start stuffing all that stuff in there, you know, I could see mixing, you know, the three meats, you know, so it's got veal and pork and beef, you know, the different fat levels. You know, I could see doing that. You know, that's going to give you a different kind of patty. I could see that. But when you start talking about, you know, oh well, I put this powder in there, and then this and then this onion and this chili, and I agree with him that's not a hamburger anymore.
One of the best burgers I ever had.
That's kielbasa. That's what kielbasa is.
Well, kielbasa is a sausage.
Right, but it's a combination of all the different meats and spices and same process.
Yeah. What were you saying about the best burger, Pretty Bird?
If you've got a lean thing of chopped beef, if you take a pat of butter, or if you make garlic butter and you just of wrap a meatball around and flatten it out, it will permeate everything and it adds the fat so it's not dry, and it is absolutely delicious.
Oh, yeah.
That's a neat trick.
I think when people make the mistake is thinking they got to have a flat patty.
Actually, the trick is if you put a thumbprint in the middle, so it's an indentation, because if you look at the burger, the middle swells up like a dome. So by putting that thumbprint in the middle, that compensates when it swells, and you end up with a flat, even patty.
Yeah.
But
I've seen one of those. You go on and just put search the best hamburger, and the different ways. Barbecue comes in number two.
Yeah. And
I can believe.
Burgers and French fries. There was talking about the French fries. There was a contest also. They were rating French fries. Guess which the favorite, the best French fry was fried in?
Animal fat.
It's a form of animal fat, yeah. It wasn't ghee, it wasn't butter, it wasn't olive oil. Which animal? Because they talk about, you know, people...
Pork.
They make
pig.
Duck fat fries. Pork. Are supposed to be really amazing, and you know they finished them off with truffle butter and a little dusting of the powdered mushrooms, and then they charge like $15 for a little bit of that. But believe it or not, the most popular ones were fried in chicken fat, schmaltz fries, because it was a familiar flavor. It didn't overpower the potato flavor. It complemented it. All these reasons why they were like, you know, these were the best. You know, you've got your gourmet truffle fries fried in duck fat fries. But, you know, your lowly chicken fat schmaltz fries rated better than the duck fat fries. So there you go.
I use chicken fat for a lot of things, and it really adds quite a bit of very subtle flavor.
And then expand on that thought and think of bouillon and anytime you're going to add that to a sauce or whatever. Even in beef, sometimes, you know, instead of using veal stock, they're like, no, chicken stock.
Yeah.
It's like, why?
Well,
why are you putting chicken stock in your beef? But, you know, the flavors complement each
grease.
Other. It's something
if you ever pay attention to bacon grease, if there's a separation in the – when it's not quite – it doesn't – not cold – it's still hot. You can see it's the bottom where all the little bits are. that's the stuff you want to spoon and keep it a jar in the fridge or something, and use that for your vegetables or whatever, potatoes,
yeah,
or whatever.
You're supposed to skim the top. The impurities rise to the top. If you really want to be crazy with it, you pour it through a coffee filter. That catches
well, you
all
want
the stuff.
Those. You want to keep the little bits. You want to keep the little bits. Yeah,
it depends on how burnt they are. You know, at one
yeah,
point
well,
they
exactly.
start to charcoal.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Italian call it placenta. Shoot, not placenta.
Pancetta.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
But that's the pig cheeks, yes.
And I use that for my. Because I do some weird stuff for Thanksgiving, because I need my kids to eat their vegetables. So I will make baked Gouda mac and cheese, but I do a bunch of pancetta. I fry it up and I cut it into these little like 1/4-inch pieces. But I also do a pound of bacon, and in that fat I roast cauliflower steaks. I slice whole heads of cauliflower, roast it up, mash it up, stick it in there, and then you've got three cheeses with a whole lot of smoked Gouda, and they eat it like they have no clue there's vegetables. They see me cooking it, and they devour it anyway.
It's great to make gravies. Make your gravies too.
Love me some pancetta.
It's like the best fat ever.
Yeah.
I make maple bacon ice cream. That's some good stuff right there.
I'll get on a plane to make maple bacon ice cream.
And maple bacon chocolate chip cookies. Holy crap. If you've never had bacon in a cookie, it sounds gross. But that little bit of salt in the bacon picks up that chocolate and kicks it up like you just would not believe. And just a hint of maple extract will bring it all together.
I will give
really,
you my address.
Really well.
You can have my address.
Yes.
You can have my address. I'll give you my address after the show, and you can send
them
to me.
They are delicious, delicious, delicious.
Yeah.
And just be careful with the kind of bacon you're going to put in your desserts. You don't want it sugar cured. You don't want it peppered. You just want your plain bacon.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Let me tell you what. Oh, not
Wondering. And Deb should be calling in because her poem is about bacon, damn it. Right, Deb, we're talking about bacon.
She's a few minutes ago, she said she'll be here in about 15 minutes.
See? Oh.
Bacon is some good stuff. Oh, if you've never had a wilted salad sounds gross. But if you take your greens.
Pour the oil over it.
A bacon fat, hello, and you toss them in that. You know, I will eat a salad all day long if it's got a little coating of bacon grease, and fat actually not unhealthy. I mean, your body makes its own cholesterol. You know, so cholesterol is not the enemy either. But your body needs fat. Your body needs fat for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And not to get into how your body processes things. Fat on its own, good fats, not bad, not like trans fats, are good for you. I mean the Inuits eat blubber. Like they eat blubber and they are not obese. You know, so that's not the culprit. It's bacon fat on just about anything is fabulous.
You don't even have to get that thick into it in the sense of any recipe that has, you know, a vinaigrette, there's oil in it. The minute I hear oil, I'm like, you know, oh, you could switch that out with bacon grease, you know, it's got to be clarified or purified.
Bacon
grease,
vinaigrette, you're killing me. I'm literally writing this down.
Yes.
I think that's going to be my new go-to.
I
haven't been able to make, and I don't know why, and it's driving me nuts, and I know there's a specific order you have to do the three things in, but I can't make a decent mayonnaise to save my life. And I get that it's oil and eggs and vinegar, and that's it. I mean, it's not a whole mess of stuff, but there's a specific order to do it in, and I just can't make magic happen.
There's a trick that I got off of a chef from New Orleans, Belton was, I think it's Chris Belton. I forget his damn first name, and that's pissing me off. But Belton was his last name. He makes his mayonnaise in the blender. It's blender mayonnaise, and you can't go wrong. You can't screw it up. I'll send it to you, or you know, yeah, I'll send you the recipe.
Has to be layered in the right order.
No, the blender takes care of it. The blender does all the work. It makes it stupid simple. It's like the same thing with hollandaise sauce. That's supposed to be so hard to make, that's got the somewhat mayonnaise in it too, if I'm not mistaken. You know, that's got the eggs, the egg yolks and whatnot. There's a way to make that and butter. Basically, it's a kind of mayonnaise as well, the hollandaise sauce. And you know, it was funny when one of my first days when I was in New Orleans, we went someplace and I was, you know, raving about the chef's hollandaise sauce. He came out to tell me, "I'm sorry, I made it from a package. It's powder." It goes to show you. Yeah, I was like, unsophisticated at that point. I didn't know the difference. But when I had the real stuff, I was like, you know, you could tell the difference. And then
stand powdered?
What's that?
Sausage gravy. I can't. If it is pure white, I won't eat it. If they didn't actually make it, if it's like powder or it's from like a can, I just can't, because it's not difficult to make a good sausage gravy. And if I'm a little island girl and I can kick ass on some sausage gravy, anybody can make it. It's just a matter of whisking the crap out of it. But I'm
one,
real picky.
That's
the biscuits and gravy. Biscuits and gravy.
Mm-hmm.
The Wondra doesn't clump.
The
Wondra, W-O-N-D-R-A. It's a type of flour.
It doesn't
clump.
You
use Wondra.
I have never had a problem with clumping.
That's a lot of work.
I've never had a problem clumping. Well, you know, because there's a way to make it, and there's no clumping involved. It's a little bit of patience and a lot of elbow grease, but no clumping involved. In fact, since we don't do wheat flour here anymore, I used rice flour. Going, listen, it might suck. It's the best I have ever had. I will never use anything else, and it does make it a little bit whiter than usual, but it still has all the sausage bits in there. But rice flour.
Yeah.
Is excellent. It's perfectly smooth. You don't get any of that weird flour powdery kind of leftover flavor on your tongue. It's some good stuff.
Yeah, that definitely makes a difference. The weight. The show I used to love when I was little, there was like all the public television shows, and Jacques Pepin was on and Julia Child. The one that I loved was, America's Test Kitchen, because they got into the science of exactly what you're talking about. They broke down why, well, if you use the white flour, this is what happens with this chemical and this thing bonds to this one. I mean, and they throw up diagrams and explain it. I'd be like, you know, all I need to remember is that I want to use this one instead of that one. You know, it was funny, but you know, I used to love that. One of the things that they threw at me that kind of broke my brain a little bit, but I won't say that they're right, but you know, growing up Italian, they actually had the nerve to say, when you make lasagna, it's better to use cottage cheese than ricotta cheese.
Yeah,
Thank you. I was like, no, but you know, it's almost the same thing in one regard, and I'm like, no, it's not. And they're like, it doesn't break down the same. It has a different consistency, and you know, after you mix it up with all the other ingredients, because you know, if you make lasagna, you normally don't just use the cheese by itself. You beat in an egg and a little
parsley and garlic.
Right. But if you do that with cottage cheese, apparently the flavor. And of course you have to have Parmesan cheese in it too. The Parmesan kind of makes up for it or something. I don't know. I haven't really tried it because, you know, Italian, and, you know, I'll deal with the ricotta, thank you. But, you know, that's their claim, is that it actually is, it holds up better, it tastes better, you know. And I won't say.
Cottage cheese is runny. How does that hold up better? You need a full-fat ricotta to bake with.
Well, you put it, the cottage, my mom used to put cottage cheese in sliced hard-boiled eggs on the top layers after it's partially cooked.
Did she use the same cheesecloth?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you could treat it like Greek yogurt and strain it through a cheesecloth, too. I don't think I'm messing up which cheese it is. I'm 90% sure it was cottage cheese, but it could have been another cheese.
Cottage,
I don't think
cheese.
So.
I cannot deal with the cottage cheese.
And you know,
blasphemous.
They extend that. They extend that. I think so too. But, you know, again, Italian. They extend that to the other recipes that they use too. So instead of just saying lasagna, they'll do it with like eggplant parmesan, or you know, instead of using the ricotta in that, they'll put a glob of the cottage cheese. And you know, I almost say that's going a little too far, but you know, again, and I'm also with you on that full fat ricotta, because the skim milk ricotta is like ew, but you know, again, that's my taste buds. One of the other things that they did that was kind of interesting was they took I think it was zucchini, and they made zucchini planks and used that like lasagna noodles and made that into like a zucchini casserole, but like a baked lasagna.
An eggplant thing too, because they're the same
quiche.
Family. Right?
Yeah. Zucchini quiche is excellent. Too.
I love fried zucchini.
But if you like sour cream on your burritos or your tacos, that's what the cottage cheese sort of does to the top layer of the lasagna.
Uh huh. And you said sour cream. One of the other tricks I found out in New Orleans that I wasn't aware of for quite some time, the main ingredient when you make onion dip is sour cream and that package of onion soup. They sub out
the
half of the sour cream and switch it with mayonnaise. So,
I actually made it full mayonnaise in a pinch for a party.
Yeah, there you go. I never would have thought of doing that. It's like, you know, they're both white and everything else, but, you know, it's a different fat to me. I wouldn't have ever thought. And then, you know, my favorite argument, too, where do you stand on Miracle Whip? It says it says salad dressing on the jar, so it's not quite a mayonnaise substitute, but.
Miracle Whip does not enter my house.
Thank you.
I like the vinegar flavor in it, you know? So it's got its purpose for me. It's not an even substitute, I don't think, but anyway.
It adds a weirdness to a sandwich. But definitely not on a salad. Unless not even in like a potato salad or a macaroni salad. I have hard lines.
Yeah, put it in tuna. Put myself in tuna. You just ruined it.
A little bit. I know a lady who used to make her deviled eggs with it. Never ate it again.
It served its purpose at some time, I guess. But I never did like it.
Well, I mean,
you know,
again,
it's almost sweet.
It goes back to personal tastes and proportions and whatnot. And again, like I was saying, some people prefer the sweet to the savory. You know, it depends on your palate and the way your taste buds go.
Definitely one camp or the other. The lovers are true. Yeah.
And it's getting on in time, so. Let me get Gerald red before the night disappears.
Absolutely, and I will put him up on the board.
Did I throw him up or did I hit history?
I don't know what you did, but I put him on the board, so you're good. And as soon as I find him on my list, here he is. Are you all ready?
Go for it.
Here we go.
Single Life, written and read by Gerald Green. I like eating pasta from a can without any stove or a pan. There's no need for heat for what I will eat because I'm a newly divorced man. Room temperature satisfies me, suggestive of marital misery. She couldn't abide my drinking inside, inebriating me frequently. I like what I'm having for dinner, although it's no nourishment winner. With extra red wine, this cuisine is fine because I am getting much thinner. It seems I will always be single, where life is rewarding and simple. I'll get me a cat and let it grow fat, preferring a purr to a mingle. So don't censure what I'm achieving, with wisdom both shallow and fleeting. I'll have it my way, from a can every day, enjoying whatever I'm eating. End poem.
It's a limerick chain.
You did an amazing job with that. That was really cool. Yeah, the bachelor joke about eating without a plate over the sink, so you don't have to do the dishes, and eating out of the can and all of that, you know. I have memories of getting sick on the raviolis, the Chef Boyardee. Oh my God. That tomato sauce, whatever they did to that spaghetti in a can, oh my God, I got sick. I can't eat that for anything. But yeah, this brings to mind all the different, you know, ways there are, and again, the personal taste of, you know, what you're eating and how you're eating it. And yeah, give me a cat. Although, you know, are we allowed to have cats as older divorced gentlemen? we're encroaching on the crazy woman stereotype, the crazy cat lady stereotype. Oh man, what's the joke about the red wine? I enjoy cooking with wine, and sometimes it winds up in the food. Anyway, great job, Gerald. Thank you for sharing. Hatter.
Before Pop Ramone Noodles, there was Chef Boyardee. That's what students and single guys lived off of. SpaghettiOs and the raviolis
and the
right
beefaroni.
Out of the can if they had to. Yeah, beefaroni. Exactly.
There's an entire industry around those ramen noodles. And there's a guy that's actually famous in Japan for making ramen. He's the only outside chef that's known for doing it. And he's got his own place, and it kills me that I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But yeah, he actually has a restaurant in Japan, like the only non-Japanese restaurant owner in Japan or something crazy like that. And he's known for the ramen. And I think there's three different types or methods, or there's three something variants of something that have to do with the ramen that he perfected, which is really a crazy thought too, because, you know, for us, you know, especially that boiling packet it's just, you know, a quick way, a shortcut to making something that's really kind of sophisticated when it comes to the broth and what they do with it.
Yeah, it's perfect. Take leftover chicken. It's good. No, Gerald, to me, hit exactly my point. Before there was Pop Ramone, there was SpaghettiOs. And Franco America was Chef Boyardee, wasn't it? Yeah.
My stomach has really bad memories of that. What about you, Pretty Bert? What do you think of Gerald's menu?
My sister has always been an open the can and eat it kind of person. If I was going to eat anything like that, it had to be hot. But I also had to peel the flat part off my little ravioli pockets because I like them that way. So I'm just weird. But when it comes to the ramen noodles, I love the noodles. I hate the MSG in those little flavor packets. So I used to take it, a couple of cans of chicken breast, and a couple of bouillon cubes and the actual noodles from the ramen packet without their seasoning packet, a little bit of salt, a little bit of garlic, the easiest chicken soup you can make. And my kids always ate it because they love the long squirrely noodles, the swirly noodles. I like those noodles. There's no other noodles like that. And we have a caller. Say hello to Lady A.
Hello.
Hello.
We just had ramen noodles and raviolis and a cake.
Yeah.
Ramen noodles and cake.
And SpaghettiOs, and earlier there was tuna and chili and all kinds of stuff.
Well, I have a much better a menu in my poem.
Well, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, so.
Okay. Oh, I'm in the dark. I'm trying to find my way around to find a light here, so just hang on a second. There. So did you get all your poetry read already?
No, I'm waiting for Deb to call. We've got Pretty Bird to read as well.
Okay. I put one in the room for you. So whenever you're ready for me to read, let me know. Wow, you guys are quiet.
I'm actually looking to see if it was updated or if I'm, because I still see Gerald when I refresh the room.
I didn't put it on the room yet. There it is. Well, I put it on the board on the other room, but it's there and on top of the board. But I just put her up if she's ready to read.
Yes, I am.
Here you go.
Really...
Oh wait, before you start, let's say hello to Miss Deborah Lee. Hey, Deb.
Hello, Pretty Bird.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Deb. You should have called just a few minutes earlier. We were talking about bacon. Wanted to drop your poem earlier because we were talking about bacon.
Bacon. Oh. You got to say it with more emphasis.
No, if you get me started on bacon, we'll never end up reading any more poetry tonight.
Right?
Bacon has its own. We were talking about the bacon grease and bacon fat and bacon vinaigrette and all kinds of fun like that.
Bacon
ice cream.
Bacon vinaigrette.
We caught you with the bacon vinaigrette catch your eye.
I have never it heard of
mine.
Bacon vinaigrette.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes. I think that's a steakhouse thing. But, it's a lovely
trip.
That
could be my house thing come tomorrow.
Oh man, you're gonna kill me here.
Yeah, this is
a cookie
scent
for me.
High calorie podcast tonight.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, Dave.
Well,
Pretty Bird
sent
me a cookie.
Lady A for this too. Well, I was talking about bacon maple cookie, bacon maple chocolate chip cookies that I make.
Oh, my God.
Because, you know, bacon.
Oh, bacon!
Well, if she so graciously said, could send me a box. Yeah, she could send me something.
Oh, my
which
word.
Reminds me of those bacon strips commercials, by the way, which is so funny. It's
bacon!
I have to gently tease Lady A about Canadian bacon because, you know, that's ham.
That's not bacon.
Ham. Yeah, there you go.
But she's trying desperately to read, so
I'm gonna say that's what's in this picture.
I'm not
here, okay, I'll shut up now.
Oh, it's okay.
You have the mic, Lydia.
Oh, okay. So this was based on read through your link that had the all of the strange foods of the world.
Okay.
And so I just kind of incorporated most of them in this piece. And this is called Deep Fried. traveling around the world, sitting at tables to eat local staples, food for strong stomachs, not for faint-hearted, lest you all barf it. Crunchy tarantulas fried on a stick. For Yanks and Canucks, we'd be sick. If you live on the wild side, walk on thin ice, you drink rice wine that's been a pool for the mice, just dipped in the wine once or twice. Or eat virgin eggs soaked in urine, pee from young boys, two or three.
What?
If death you are cheating, then fugu you'll be eating. Hootie is no comparison to the true blowfish, the poison one. Chefs balance the poison enough for lips to look bee-stung. Saved by the best for last, bound to make you gag, get ready for the festival known as the Testy Festy. Feast on bull's testicles. Oh, my, what a spectacle. Yep, deep-fried bull's balls where grown men free-fall. Friends they call besties catch them when they eat testes, their hands covering their own crown jewels.
You know, it says something that that's the second poem talking about these Rocky Mountain oysters.
Yeah, extra verses there.
Is that what that picture is? Are those what bull testicles look like?
Yeah.
That's not something I never ever needed to see.
They're huge, though. Like,
me too.
I'll put a picture in the room to show you the true size or gargantuan.
Well, I've seen them hanging on real bulls, so I can imagine.
There's a joke about a bullfighter going out after a match to this restaurant and watching this guy get served this plate of like spaghetti with these two huge meatballs in it, and he ordered that, and the guy said no, that's a special. We only serve one dish after each match. So the next time he was in the audience at the bullfight, he goes and he orders the same thing, and they bring him this dish. And there's these two little, you know, meatballs in it. And he's like, you know, what's this? You know, the guy yesterday, he had these two huge meatballs. And these are like, you know, an eighth of the size. And the waiter says, oh, I'm sorry, sir. The bull won.
you broke up. I didn't hear.
The bull won.
So for the matadors.
Okay.
Anyway.
you brought up
the fugu too. That was always interesting to me. There's no part of that fish that isn't poisonous. So the experience is actually eating that poison.
Yeah.
I don't need that experience.
What did you think of Lady A's feast? You pretty bird, you're talking
about. What did
you ask? I missed it too. It's okay. I absolutely. Earlier today, when we were talking about like baby duck foot soup, I was thinking of all these street vendors you see in all of these travel shows, and my mind went right to all of these insects and giant spiders and all those things that they sell, like shish kebabs, just right there. And I was kind of hoping somebody would mention in the Philippines, it is a delicacy, and they have them in food carts on the side of the road, duck embryos, where they are fetuses cooked that you eat. Little hairs and all, like it's supposed to make you virile or supposed to mean good luck or whatever.
Yeah.
The heck, there is no way in heck I'm going to eat that, just because I don't eat veal. Like, I can't do baby animals. It's just not, well, that's not true. I do lamb, but lamb doesn't necessarily mean newborn baby.
Spring
and,
lamb,
but nobody mentioned that because apparently I'm the only ghost person here. But I love this, and you're right. I mean, the Testy Festy. I would go to the Testy Festy just to see what people are cooking, who's going to eat it. I would people watch and make bets with whoever I'm there with. I bet you he eats it, you know. But I can't imagine
that's
ever
nuts.
Eating it. Yeah, that's not
that
so funny. Exactly.
Look how big they are. I put them in the room.
They don't all hang out there, and I guess it depends on, you know, when in the rutting season you catch them, how big they are. But let's not dwell on that. Although I have to mention it's not edible. But in using, you know, the other parts of it, they actually use the bull penis to make a cane.
Okay.
Make a cane?
A cane, yeah, a walking stick. They make, it's long enough to make into a walking stick.
How do they keep it not being long enough?
Huh.
Apparently that's not a problem. it's just knowing that they do it, I guess it's how old it was, and you know, not all of it is on the outside of the body, I guess. So, you know, that there's parts of it in reserve. I don't know that the biology of it, but it's long enough to make
it.
Flesh? They cure it and tan it and do whatever they do to firm it up.
Oh,
well, yeah. I also say you take the elasticity of the item and stretch it
and petrify it.
And then harden it. so that it's already expanded on and you can't. Yeah.
I'm going to put my will.
If you've got too much time on your
hands. And you will. This is what I want. Done
if
with
you
it.
Have,
anyway.
I'll be a walking cane. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So then.
Bad idea.
If you've got too much time on your hands, Google it.
And who are you going to leave that to, Hatter?
Right?
Or eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Oh, my goodness. That's not a hoe.
Beware the walking stick.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you comment to Lady Ahab? Can you comment for Lady Ahatter?
Oh, yeah. Well, it got us talking. You hit all the goodies.
She went around the world.
Well, let me get back to the page. Gosh darn it. I'm sorry.
The tarantula is interesting because if you don't put them over the heat, you know, that fries the little hairs off of it. That's why they do that.
Oh, gag me with a spoon. Look at the chat wall. Oh, man.
Did somebody put up the picture?
Well, those are the bull testicles.
Lady A has double-fisted handfuls
of jiggly bull balls, yes.
Oh, why don't you show them? Why do you got to show them live?
Well, this is the before, and the one in her poem is the after. Like, you know, they say that one looks like it's been boiled. So it's all, you know, not so wobbly.
One's the sushi version.
I can show you one that's a burrito, and the whole thing's made out of bull testicles.
They don't. They do always cook them, right? It's not like steak tartare.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think
they cook them. They cook them well.
Ooh.
They cook them well.
Listen, people eat raw a lot of things. You never know.
Yeah.
No, I know.
Rocky Mountain oysters. They don't.
I'm sorry. Oh man, I went from my mouth watering and my stomach growling over conversations about bacon. So I really want to thank you, Lady A, for taking me out of that state. And now, just the thought of half the stuff that you just said has me gagging. Then you put
Excellent.
That photo on the board, which totally
has me. Every sphincter.
On a continual gag at the moment and trying to control myself. That's gross.
Is it wrong that I'm thinking about the Jell-O jigglers?
I mean, at least in her poem, because of the way the purpleness marbled through there, it looks like some fake thing. But then she puts the real deal, and you know I'm going to tell everybody, look on the board, that's Lady A holding the show. anyway.
Yeah, but those other ones are real, too.
I know, but I'm going to tell everybody that those are your hands.
Those are veins that are showing in the other one.
Yeah, obviously they're about this big.
Man.
They fit right in your hand, matter. I can put
up
some elephant dust.
I'm just,
They look like they're fat on goose eggs.
Deb, you want to comment for Lady A before you read yours?
No, I think she did brilliantly as far as looking up all those really cool things and grossing us out from start to finish and killing any appetite we had for cookies or anything else in between. But I think it was fun, all those cockamamie things that she listed. I really can't say that there's one that I'm in any real hurry to sample. So it was really clever, and I enjoyed it. Oh, that's gross.
Okay, I was going to say, did you know that, I don't know if the kids, are we having, is this PG-13 or anything like that?
Yes, it's PG-13.
Okay.
Well, at the top of the show, one of the things I mentioned, Deb, were you know, food is a lot like poetry as far as personal taste goes, so. You know, this definitely reminds us of that, you know, different cultures. And that was the whole idea of it in my head, too, because, you know, you read about some of these strange food facts, and you sit there and you go, no. You know, really? You know, it was even, you know, it even made its way into Hannibal was the one where they mentioned the Orlean. It works its way all over the place. People are just fascinated by it. And,
right.
You know, it's a question of taste and culture to me. You know, it's like once you get past wrapping your mind around it, people love it, you know. It can't be a trend for nothing, you know. I mean, I wince every time I hear the mention of the word haggis, but, you know, I've never tried it, but, you know, the ingredients don't sound appealing to me. I don't know that I'd go out of my way to try it, but I don't know that I'd push it away either. I guess once I get hit with the smell of it, I might. I don't know. But, you know, it's a big adventure for me, you know. I love to be, you know, wouldn't it be cool to be able to say, you know, hey, I had haggis, you know, or I had this or that, you know. Bull testicles, as, you know, odd as it sounds, I won't say it's readily available, but I don't think it would be too hard to source. You know, I wonder how many menus it's actually on. You know, it's one of those things. Maybe there's a region in you know, some place that just, you know, hey, we specialize in it. You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm very thankful that I've never been to a restaurant where anyone tried to convince me to try them. But to each his own. And hey, they probably taste like chicken. They say everything else in the world does. But,
and then Hatter goes to put this on the board, and now they look really good.
That's what I was going to say. They look sort of like crab cakes or something.
They look tasty.
And then, I'm sorry, I just, once somebody told me what they were, my brain couldn't comprehend.
Maybe
my mouth
they're wrapped in bacon.
For that. Yeah, so like, look.
No, I completely understand that. You know, they could be the best thing in the world, but if you can't get your mind past, you know, putting them in your mouth, then you'll never get there.
Right. Well, I've never tasted lamb because I just can't get past Mary had a little lamb and Deb ain't eating him. Yeah.
Have you ever had a gyro?
That ain't mutton.
Nope.
You never had a gyro sandwich?
I have not. Why?
Okay.
Because it's a mix of lamb.
It's beef and lamb.
Oh,
I love goat. Oh, I can cook me up some goat.
That's another experience.
Deb, I want to put a video on the board for people to see. Do I embed it first or just put the link?
Embed it because the link will take them to another page.
Okay.
And I said, no. and the video's PG-13?
Oh, yes. Cool.
You know, there's two things.
What
one,
I have
auntie...
a feeling I'm going to be even more grossed out and gagging in about a minute.
Well, my, you could read yours and disappear if you want then, Deb.
My mom used to love this lavender gum that she used to get when she was a kid. And when she saw it again, she's like, look what I found. And it tasted like perfume, and I almost threw up. But she was just chewing it like it's the best thing on the planet. It literally tastes like smells and tastes like lavender oil. And my aunt had a little Chinese neighbor when she was growing up that she always had the best snacks, best little chocolate, little crunchy snacks ever, is chocolate covered grasshoppers. And she didn't know this for years. But she would go over there and just eat this little bowl, little crunchy little tidbits that were so tasty. She spent like 5 years just eating the neighbor's chocolate covered grasshoppers.
Wow. Now, you know, I'm saying between the choice between the two, and I'll give the chocolate a try, but I'm sorry. The mountain can keep its oysters, and so can the bull and the goat and anybody else that, you know, sorry, and eel.
There's a lot more interesting parts of the bull.
They didn't even bred these spiders.
Our whole thing, they go through the process of having them like that and frying them and eating them.
Oh.
I see it's a Dodger fan. Typical Dodger fan.
Oh no.
What?
That's just why did I push play? They're cooking them that they're alive.
Not for long.
Well, you're not even allowed to do that to a lobster anymore. You have to cut to stab this spot on them before you can cook them.
Right between the eyes.
That's because they scream.
I refresh because I can't even look at that anymore. Okay. Ew.
Wrap your mind around some bacon.
Okay.
I put you back up there so you don't have to scroll up.
A little different. I just went with something weird that I like to eat. Like I took that Elvis tip there and just ran with that one.
That's cool.
I started mentioning this on the show the other night, but it's called, and if you happen to have bacon crumbled on top, here we go. Grab a tablespoon and push it into the top of mashed potatoes. So you can see a ravine in the mound. Pour the gravy into the space and mix it all around. Then separate sauce from the barbecued baked beans and add the tangy goo and stir in all the ingredients to blend all the flavors. Butter a slice of bread to eat with it too. Now, scoop up the mixture with a spoon. Plop the dollop on the buttered bread and fold it like a soft shell taco and bite once you do. Heat from the potatoes hits the pad of creamy salted butter, melting it on contact, and then it oozes, flowing over the tongue with every chew. And if you bake the loaf of bread yourself, even yummier. Okay, now I'm hungry again, so... looking at that chat wall, that's for sure.
Well, that sounds delicious. And Hatter was talking about the sweet versus the savory. The baked beans are going to make that a little sweet, I think, depending on what kind of baked beans you use, too. Because, you know, my mom, when I was little, used to put, maple syrup and all this brown sugar, and her baked beans were like candy.
If you take, you have to doctor baked beans. You can't just open up a can of baked beans and eat them because, you can't. You fry up some onions in butter.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And once they're sautéed soft enough, you add in the can of baked beans. Then you want to pour in an enormous amount of Heinz ketchup. And then a teaspoon of yellow mustard, and a half a teaspoon of Goldens or spicy mustard, whatever. And then a tablespoon of Sweet Baby Ray's spicy honey barbecue sauce.
Okay.
And a teaspoon of A1 steak sauce. And mix it all together. And that's barbecue baked beans. Just
yummy.
Saying.
Good.
Yeah, everyone's got their own variant on the recipe. That's for me. That's an excuse to fry up some bacon and put it in the beans. But
oh, stop
anyway.
With the bacon! You're killing me.
I'm
kind of
my car, together.
You know the poem about baked beans, don't you?
What the grumbly fruit?
The more you eat,
beans,
the more you toot.
The more you eat, the more you fart, no, the more you fart, the better you feel. So eat your beans at every meal.
There, see? Or beans, they make you fart down your leg and in your sock.
Okay.
No, I heard it was toot.
From
it was toot.
Those visuals are wonderful.
1960, whatever, my father used to say, beans, the magical fruit, the more you eat, the more you toot, the better you feel, so eat the beans with every meal.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's, I think, 3 or 4 more verses to that, actually, but that's what he used to recite and what I remember from him, so, yeah.
And we are a room full of men and women singing the beans song. How'd that happen?
I want to know how you women manage not farting.
I got to tell a story. Mel Brooks, when he was creating Blazing Saddles, he walked up to a certain actor. Now you would recognize this guy. I can't remember his name, but he goes, "I'm going to make you famous." He goes, "What?" He goes, "You're going to be the first one to fart on screen during the that had never been done before." And that started around the campfire with the beans.
Yeah.
And
sure some more beans.
Sure, he made him famous. They're going to make you famous, man. I don't know if I want to be that kind of famous.
You're the fart dude.
Yeah.
Harvey Korman
was
in
that. Who was the first one?
I don't think it was Harvey Korman, though, but he was one of the ones in that scene,
if I'm not
mistaken.
It's the cowboy. He's got a real cowboy slang. He's got a real wide mouth, wide head, or black hat. You'll see if you just Google Blazing Saddles around the campfire, he's the one in black. You know who I'm talking about.
They set it on
fire,
didn't they light a match to it or something?
No. Mel Brooks walked up to him and says, "I am going to make you famous beyond your wildest dreams forever." And he told him, "You're going to be the first one to fart on screen." And it started the big campfire beans thing on Blazing Saddles.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
Sort of wrestled. Guy said he wrestled with it for a while and goes, "I don't know," because a lot of it is, of course, taped in.
Yeah.
Of course, it's all dud, right? But he was the first.
But you get known for it, yeah.
Yeah, made him famous. I'll see if I can find his picture.
Is Deb's poem making you famous? What'd you think, Hatter?
Oh, yeah. Made me hungry.
Tell us she's...
Me too, Hatter.
Yeah, I think what I wrote was that my butter got a big... mention in it. No, it's always good. Slice of bread. That's just like you, Deb. I like the beans, the bean sauce or barbecue sauce on my ear of corn.
Oh, okay.
With the butter and pepper Try it.
Yeah, I was telling earlier, Deb. I've got a friend. He's actually Russian. That likes to put mayonnaise on his corn.
Oh.
I can see that. Most farmers put mayonnaise on everything. They put mayonnaise on
mayonnaise
all,
is corn
all
hamburgers.
Yeah, but corn. I guess why not?
Well, what do you put on asparagus?
salt, pepper, and butter.
Butter.
Bacon.
No mayonnaise.
Nope.
It's really good in bacon fat.
It's cold and rolled in little tiny sandwiches for a sour.
Wrapped in prosciutto and then baked.
There you go. That too. Or bacon.
Because mayonnaise is huge. Yeah, mayonnaise is huge for asparagus. And artichoke, right? Just
I've
butter,
never
you
put mayonnaise on any on vegetables.
To me, that's overkill too. What'd you think of Deb's poem, Lady A?
Oh, I thought it was entirely intriguing and inviting to have a snack. It was very, very tempting.
Yeah,
like
I'm thinking that these late
things,
night...
It sounds really, really good.
Yeah, these late night shows where we are discussing food or such... It is really cruel when you think about it in the long run, because now on some coasts it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you're sitting here trying to figure out what can you go in the kitchen and eat that you know you shouldn't be eating at 1 o'clock in the morning, but you're
it's
so hungry. I think Pretty Bird did it to us a few months ago.
When I was doing the sweet treats on one of the sweet shows when she had a doctor's appointment and we were talking about all the confections and
I think I even said jokingly that I hate this show at least two or three times during the course of that show.
I stood in front of my refrigerator like I was like, 10 years old, everything wide open going, what can I have that's sweet? Because, I tend to not have ready-made sweet snacks around because I eat them.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel you.
That's smart. That's another thing about food, it's a psychological condition, people that eat their emotions. I could tell you from personal experience, not having, much to do other than get up and, take care of whatever I need to take care of. I spend too much time in the kitchen. I'll sit there and I'll go in there and I have to say it out loud sometimes. You're not hungry. What are you doing in here? I yell at myself.
Back and you do what you're doing, and then you go back to the same fridge 10 minutes later and there's still nothing there. And you do that a few times and then you go to bed.
If you get a box of Honey Nut Cheerios, they have an ever so slight sweetness. But they also, and it's not really a meaty flavor, but there's something but at least they're healthy and they...
Yeah, they've got a heartiness to them.
Yeah.
Oats. Something
called
in there.
Oats.
And then that touch of honey on the oats is just so like...
Yeah, they're delicious.
Yeah. And you don't need milk or anything. You eat it like popcorn. And you might just lower your cholesterol too while you're snacking. Just saying.
I used to carry Ziploc bags of that around when I had when my kids were little all the time. They all had to have their own bag because God forbid they touch the same stuff. But
that's where the habit starts.
Enjoy. Yeah.
Yep. That's where the habit starts.
You
keep it around for the kids, and then you're like, wow, this is pretty good. Melt in your mouth.
True. You know what's surprisingly good? I say eating cereal is cookies. If you call anything cookies, the kids will eat it. And the Lucky Charms is surprisingly good with no milk.
Yeah, absolutely. The little marshmallow things are the sweet
and the little other stuff.
Day that I never bought my kids that kind of cereal. Once in a very blue moon, I might have let them have something like that, but I never. I have I like Weetabix and Life brand, Life cereal and things like that, porridge.
Well,
they
did you ever compare the label and sugar content to the Wheat Bits to say Cheerios? Because I think you'd be surprised.
Wheat Bits?
Just saying.
They had cereal, I can't remember what brand it was, that was, I think it was Shredded Oats, and in the middle of it had a dollop of real fruit. So they had like a blueberry one and a strawberry one. That's the one I used to snack out of hand.
Yeah, frosted
wheat.
or not just frosted. Yeah.
It wasn't frosted though. It was stuffed.
Yeah, it's called shredded wheat. Just the shredded wheat. You can get the little squares or the big ones.
But they have them with the fruit in it.
It had fruit in the middle.
Yeah, it had fruit in the middle. Now them I don't like with milk on them. I like to eat them like a handheld snack as well.
I'm not good with milk on those either. It's like wet hay. It's horrible.
Yeah, but it's fine.
I eat them crunchy.
Oh, here's texture experience.
It's not. It's like two. Let me see now. 2 grams of sugar. Is that a lot? Did you look up the Cheerios? Son, look on that box of Cheerios. Tell me how many grams of sugar, please.
The fats. Look at the fat number, too.
No, the sugar. But while you're looking at that, I have to say the first time I ever heard of, like, a mashed potato sandwich was, like, 10 years ago. Because there was never any leftover mashed potatoes in my house ever. So, you know, we never got creative. But they sound really good. I mean, carbs on carbs is probably not the best, you know, for, you know, health reasons. But it sounds really good. And then you mentioned tacos. So that's like a mashed potato taco. And I'm just like, I could eat that.
I did something for my kids.
I didn't hear either one of you.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Rack and Hatter were talking at the same time. I don't know what either one said for sure.
I take mashed potatoes and make them into patties and fry them.
Yes, I love potato pancakes.
Leftover, so yeah.
And Hatter, what were you
saying? My kids on too. What we used to do was cold lasagna sandwiches. Or just the cold. Oh man, it's so good. If you got sourdough bread and butter it, slice a piece of lasagna and put it on and eat. Oh, sure.
Pretty Bird has a poem about the other white meat that I want to get rid.
Uh-oh. I don't know how I feel about that laugh.
I only have 2 types of food, and one of them is not meant for this channel, so now there's this. And let me put it up on the board. Some of you might have heard it before. I don't remember.
You're up on the board.
Am I? I have to refresh. There I am. Okay. And let me go and open it up. My computer is very slow today. This is Hannibalized. And it goes like this. It was somehow the most beautiful thing I'd ever known, this hatred. A purity of emotion so dire held no blurred edges to hide behind. That truth padlocked my gaze, bare and unbroken. I was jealous of that clarity, of the remorselessness in warm eyes. I couldn't say if it was love before that moment. All I ever needed was that it was to be trusted enough to know the truth, to remove one's masks and hopes to be free, to lay bare one's demons, is bravery born in caring. So how could it not be love after that moment? Seeing the fear in a strong heart, I knew I wasn't scared. I was wrong. For fear of the unknown comes when you cannot trust even yourself, to lose your boundaries as they melt in amoral, immoral turpitude, wickedness through depths a soul should never reach, where acceptance of one permits the many. And I love those warm eyes, not in spite of, but because of his truth. So he hates. And I love, and he feasts, and I smile at his peace. In the price of hatred in hell spawn proportions, scaled to bite-sized portions. I wash the dishes as he prepares the sweet meat. I wish I didn't know what that tastes like. I wish I could hate him like I hate myself. But who am I to love a man who loves the taste of a woman? It was somehow the most beautiful thing I'd ever known, this hatred. Now I only hate myself for loving, despite knowing what that tastes like. In poem.
Oh, man. I remember that scene where he's feeding him and he's hating himself for enjoying it. Wow. That emotion of you know, liking something that's forbidden is really, really powerful. Where is it? There's some culture they call that long pig, and I don't remember where it is or where that came from, but I didn't.
People meat is long pig?
People meat is called long pig, yes. But my favorite reference to that, and they don't say long pig, but it was that one of the most iconic episodes of The Twilight Zone is when the guys trying to jump off the spaceship with the aliens are taking him away to Nirvana or whatever. And when they first came to Earth, they left a book, and the whole, you know, series, they're trying to decipher the book. And at the end, he's trying to get off the spaceship, and he's screaming, "It's a cookbook! It's a cookbook!" So,
the book was called To Serve Man, and it came down to the pretense that they were going to be our slaves, and they had this teach us all this other stuff that what they were doing
was
loading a couple thousand people at a time up to the other planet, and what they'd do is fatten them up. And when
they turned Earth into a farm planet.
Yeah, they stopped world hunger. They thought it was great, and they were fattening everybody up and shipping them off by the thousands to another planet where they'd eat them.
That kind of reminds me of Soylent Green.
Yeah,
exactly.
People were fighting to get on the ship, too.
Soylent Green is people. Soylent Green is people.
So, Deb, what'd you think of Pretty Bird's lovely menu?
Well, I think that by the time she was done reading, I was like, holy. Actually, I did. I wrote holy and S-H asterisk T, just to be polite. And then I made the symbol of worthy and hit my save button. So it's like, that's where I was.
We know you meant darling.
No, I meant holy shit. PG-13. I've heard that word before.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And this was awesome. And wowza. Well, I don't even know. There was no pickup spot between the tone in your voice when you read and the juicy conclusions of your thoughts there when you, despite knowing what that tastes like. Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering where the food was coming in.
You ask somebody to tell you all their secrets and share their demons, and you love them anyway, and then you kind of have to.
What'd you think, Lady A?
Well, I'm just maybe I'm reading this wrong, but is this a PG-13 poem?
Yes, it's all about. Hannibal Lecter and, like, say this is his girlfriend, and now she knows what he does, and he serves her the women.
Oh, wow. That's what it is? I missed that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, Jeffrey Dahmer or something like that.
Well, in the movie, he's Hannibal the Cannibal, so that kind of led
you
down
that
path.
I get that. I just thought I thought it was very sensual. Especially towards
the
end.
The tone of her voice.
She
lulled you into a false sense of delightful sensualness, and then you found out, oh, shit, and hence my reply to her poem.
Well, I mean, eating can be a very sensual experience. There's a lot of
that
parallels
true,
to that.
But I bet not in this case.
No.
That movie was very romantic in parts of those movies.
Yeah, charming. He was charming.
Yeah. Like when he met the Italian police officer's wife at the opera, that was one of the most powerfully sensual scenes that I've ever seen. There was just something that was amazing about it. And he was in love with Clarice, and you sort of sense that he would never hurt her. But he was, well, that Anthony Hopkins is probably one of my favorite actors anyways, but I found him to be, his character was, even though it was creepy and horrible, and but he had a sensuality about him that was very attractive.
Yeah, yeah. That was a very well-written, well-played movie, to be sure.
Yeah.
And she, I think she did a great job capturing that mood, the revulsion of knowing where it came from and not being able to turn it away. And, you know, it's like a diabetic looking at a cheesecake. I know I'm not supposed to eat it, but I got my insulin, damn it. Oh, God. Yeah. Ooh. All right. That's pretty much, I think that's everything. I've got my other poem, but you guys have heard it before, and we're over on time, I think. So I'll say thank you to Deb and everyone that wrote, Hatter, Lady A, Pretty Bird, Gerald and Deb. And thank you again, Pretty Bird, for being my eyes and letting me, you know, look good, taking that burden off of me, because, you know, there's no way I'd be able to do all that at the same time. It was a fun night, and it was definitely something that, you know, we could probably talk about for hours on end. But it's come to a close, so it's time to go raid the icebox, I guess, and say goodnight.
Good night. Who's cooking the bacon?
Thanks a lot. It was a great talk.
I've got a link I'm going to post, so don't run away right away. I have to dig it up for a second first, but you guys are going to hate me for it, but I'm putting it up there anyway. And I know Print Birth had it.
Yes.
It's just one of those things, if you haven't had, you know what I'm doing.
I do.
Oh man, it's two of the best flavors melded together. Chocolate covered bacon. And there's a place that sells, they sell it a dozen at a time, and it's you know, you could order it. It's really good.
How good it actually is. And I actually prefer the dark chocolate over the milk chocolate. Because the salt in it adds such a richness, and it makes it sweeter than it actually is, but it's not actually sweet. So it's all these rich, delicious flavors, and it's a good thing they don't sell it, you know, in like 20-pound boxes, because I would die.
You're torturing me. I'm hanging up. Love and respect.
Good night.
Great show.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. Night.
Thank you for using Blog Talk.